I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. 20-something Theatres next production is 52 Pickup, the show written by TJ Daw and Rita Bose. The show is directed by Brian Cochran and features Sarah Andrina Brown and Dan Willows. Joining me now is TJ Daw, who I'll get to tell us about this show. There are 52 scene titles written on a deck of cards that are thrown in the air. The performers perform the scenes one by one, picking up the cards randomly. Visit theaterwire.com for tickets and 20somethingtheater.com for information. TJ Daw is an award-winning writer, performer, and director. Some of his recent projects include Medicine, Post Secret, Mark Lear and Young's Never Shoot a Stampede Queen, and the play Toothpaste and Cigars, which he co-wrote and was recently made into the film The F-Word. TJDaw.ca is the website for more. The Twitter handle is TJ_Daw. The show runs from the 13th to the 29th of November at the Havana Theater, 1212 Commercial Drive. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, TJ Daw. Mr. Daw, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Very happy to be here.
So I had Rita on a couple weeks ago for her show.
Oh, okay.
Which I guess opened this week. Also had to do with Dr. Gabor Maté, which you had a show that involved him as well. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, Medicine was about my attending a retreat that he facilitated in which participants ingest the Peruvian shamanic plant medicine ayahuasca, which has very strong psychotropic properties. And Dr. Maté helps you understand what your issues are and what to explore when you're on the medicine, and then what to make of what you experience, because it's different for everyone and it's different every time, and it often has deep resonances to your deepest, most abiding source of pain. So under the right circumstances, it can be a tool for profound change and transformation.
So I mean, Dr. Maté is obviously a significant person in this community and around the world. I mean, a lot of people admire him for his work. So you and Rita have done shows that involve him,
mm-hmm.
hers a little more than yours, I guess, because he's actually on stage with her.
Right, yeah.
So how did, did you and Rita meet each other because of this mutual interest, or how did this collaboration with 52 Pickup, how did that come about in the timeline, say?
Actually, Rita and I met a long time ago. I did my first one-man show in Vancouver in 1998. I was at the Vancouver Fringe, and it made a pretty big splash. So I started meeting a lot of people in the theater community, and she was one of them. And around that time, I was in a late-night show that ran Fridays and Saturdays at a venue that doesn't exist anymore called The Looking Glass. And we were doing a rip-off of a rip-off. See, this company in Chicago called the Neo-Futurists runs a regular show on Fridays and Saturdays late at night called Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, in which they present 30 plays in 60 minutes, 30 short plays that the company themselves has written. And each play begins with the word go and ends with the word curtain, and the audience gets a list of the titles of kind of a menu of that night's available plays. And every time they hear the word curtain, the audience members shout out the number of the one they want to hear or they want to see next.
Mm.
And those items are, there's 30 cards with numbers on them on a clothesline, so the actors will pull off the number of the one they heard first, and then read the title, and then do that scene, and so on and so on. So a company based out of Victoria did their own version of this. They kind of stole the concept, and they called it 29 Plays in 59 Minutes, and then I was in a version that stole the concept from the Victoria company, and our version was called This Hour is 22 Playlists. And we were very self-conscious of the fact that this isn't our idea. We shouldn't just be taking somebody else's idea. But it was a great way to generate new material and to have it be different every night, so that if an audience came back a week or 4 weeks later, they would see at least somewhat of a different show. And it's a very catchy concept, and we really enjoyed being a part of it. So an alternate concept that I generated while we were brainstorming was, what if it was based on, you know, the absurd card game 52 Pickup? What if instead of 29 or 22 short plays, it was 52? And we never really did anything with that idea. And then later, I came up with the idea of, what if all the scenes were based on the same subject?
Mm.
On our closing night of This Hour is 22 Playlists, I had lived a reference in one playlist to another, because they were all unrelated. That was the concept, 22 completely unrelated playlists. But I had lived a reference to one of the other ones, and that got a big laugh, and then that brought the idea, okay, what if they told the same story, but in this fragmented way that was delivered differently every time? And then maybe 3 or 4 months later, I came up with a subject, which was a relationship. That just seemed like the perfect subject to describe in that way, because you could look at it from all kinds of different angles. You could look at who the people were before they met, and what they were looking for in a partner, and then what it was like when they met, and the whole process of getting together, and the upswing, and then the settling in, and then the downswing, and then the breakup, and then the meetup after the breakup. Like, you could easily generate 52 moments in a relationship. And when we think about relationships, we don't necessarily think of them in chronological order.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's done in a non-chronological order every time kind of reflects the way we remember the different experiences. One, something might remind you of this, or a fight might, in a play, come immediately after a loving scene, or the first meeting might come before the breakup, or the other way around, or anything like that. So I had that idea, and I started working on it, and then I got to know Rita better through some mutual friends, and we came up with the idea to do the show together, to create it and perform it together. And we co-wrote it and then toured it in the summer of 2000. Mm-hmm. And since then, it's been produced pretty steadily. It's my most produced play. And it's been done across Canada and in the U.S. and overseas, and it's been translated into a couple other languages. The concept really seems to resonate with people. It's easy to market. It's intriguing. And who hasn't been in a relationship?
Right.
It really plays on a lot of people's common memories and experiences.
So what's written on the card? Just the title, is that right?
Just the scene title, yeah.
Yeah, and then so the premise of each scene, do the actors know that before, or do they just...
Yeah, the scenes are fully scripted, and the actors have memorized every scene.
I see.
And then they just have to be ready to perform whatever scene is announced when they read the card that they've randomly picked up off the floor. The show starts with them throwing the deck of cards up in the air. They scatter all over the stage. They pick up one at random. Some are face up, some are face down. But even the ones that are face up, you don't really get a chance to, like, oh, that's the one I want to do next, and I'll pick up that one. You know, you really just grab it, read it, and then go. And every scene is written having it in mind that this could open the show, or this could close the show. And you got to be ready for that.
Well, what have directors and performers, what have they asked you about, say, the interpretation of the characters, the dialogue, or even just what you mean by each scene that you've written? I mean, do they have specific questions for you?
Generally, they want to know what's the chronology, and that's about it, because the play was written very deliberately, allowing whoever's putting it on to add layers of meaning to it. Some scenes are very short. Some scenes are just two lines long. There's no movement on stage necessitated. There's no set necessitated. There are some scenes that reference other scenes, and then every production I've seen, the specific production has found ways to link one scene with another through movement or through a given gesture, or things like that. So it really is a script that invites the creativity of whatever team is putting it on. And I've never seen a given company put it on and have it be exactly like another company's interpretation. It's really pleasing to me as a writer to see people just run with this in so many different directions.
And do the actors themselves, do they have a better understanding of their characters or what this play's about because they perform it the way they do differently every night?
I think so. Yeah. You know, it really keeps them on their toes. You cannot be on autopilot if you have no idea what scene's going to come next. It just brings you right back to the moment every time. And then it's actually really exciting as an actor on stage because it could be anything, and then there's always astounding coincidences in the order that the scenes come up, to the point that people often don't believe it really is random.
Yeah.
And, of course, if anybody really doubts that, then they're invited to come back again, and they will see a completely different ordering of the scene, although each scene is in and of itself the same.
Yeah. Well, did you, in the course of writing the scenes, did you have an understanding of love and relationships that changed at the end of it? And I mean, having seen these different productions now over the years, has that changed your conception of what love and what relationships ought to be?
For myself, I drew a lot from the relationships that I'd been in up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So none of them had really been tremendously long-term. I'd just been in a couple of relationships, the longest of which had lasted about a year. And there's a couple based out of Seattle that does the show, and they're in their mid to late 40s now. And they've talked about doing the show now is actually very interesting because the same words can apply to people that are the age where it's common to have been married for a long time. It actually makes the stakes higher. So a breakup just isn't a breakup. It's a major event because if somebody's got, you know, if they put their chips on this relationship could be my shot at love at 48, that's a whole lot different than it is at 23.
Yeah. So where does that insight come from then? You obviously say you drew on previous relationships, but I'm wondering, to get personal here for a sec, how does that affect, say, future relationships or current ones, having the insight that you have from what you've written?
Well, a big thing that happens in the first chronological scene, we have both characters addressing the audience. They're not aware of each other, and they're talking about what they're looking for in a relationship. And what they're looking for is exactly the opposite of what each other actually is. And when they get into the whole meeting each other stage, they really suppress what they actually want because they're attracted to each other, and they pretend that things that bother them actually don't. And then, of course, those chickens come home to roost later, and the relationship eventually crumbles. So that's something that I can really recognize from myself from those years, is just that desire to be with someone or the desire to have sex with somebody I'm attracted to, and suppressing my own actual feelings and thoughts and pretending that things are okay when they're not. So that's a big thing in that. And the character that's based on me is also very reluctant to actually open up and talk and have difficult conversations. So seeing that reiterated on stage again and again is a good reminder. Like, if you keep going down that path, yeah, that's what's going to happen to a relationship.
So opposites don't attract?
Well, they can. It's just a matter of being honest with each other and being honest with yourself, which isn't always easy to do, especially when you're lonely and you're attracted to someone.
Yeah. Humor, I mean, is obviously a part of the show.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I'm wondering, when you're looking at love, with humor, does laughing about, say, even heartache, does that make it all more bearable?
Oh, definitely, yeah. You can laugh with sympathy. You can laugh at, you know, at the genuinely funny and happy moments, because even in a relationship that failed, there were tremendous moments. You know, there was connection, or at least perceived connection. There was fun. There was the enjoyment of each other's company, and you can look back and say, that was genuinely a good time. And there was laughter. You know, that's always a bond between people. People who enjoy making each other laugh. The male character has a monologue in which he talks about how much he loves making the woman laugh, how the sound of her laugh makes him feel like he's in a Gene Kelly movie and walking down the street and suddenly everybody's joining in with him and dancing, and, you know, the world is alive.
Well, what for you, led you down this path of working in the theater, writing plays, as you have? I mean, was that something at an early age you wanted to do?
Some of my earliest experiences that are connected to very fond and powerful memories are of my dad taking me to the movies. Mm-hmm. Like big epic movies like Star Wars or Raiders of the Lost Ark on the big screen, and just falling in love with that and really wanting to be part of that world. And I went to UVic to study theater to become an actor, and while I was there, I discovered that the regular route of simply being an auditioning actor didn't appeal to me as much as the people I was starting to discover who created their own things. Now, there wasn't as much of a culture of that then as there is now, because back then it was just much more segregated. An actor is an actor, a writer is a writer, a director is a director. Since then, there's just been more people who have come up and made prominent careers for themselves doing combinations of those things, which is really fascinating to me. And that was fascinating from the moment I discovered it in my late teens. And slowly I started writing my own stuff. And that's what I built my career doing. So I kind of stumbled into it. I never trained as a director. I never trained as a writer. But I did a lot of just writing. I'd always done a lot of writing. So it was just, there was something in me that wanted to come out. I wanted to tell my own stories. And theater just seemed an avenue to do that. You know, if I'd started getting published in magazines or writing novels when I was young, and that had seemed an avenue, then I might have gone there, or spoken word poetry or stand-up comedy. But I trained in the theater, and I stumbled into the Fringe circuit, and the Fringe is very easy to get into because there's no barrier to entry. It's a lottery.
Yeah.
It's simply luck. So I was able to get my stuff self-produced that way and find audiences and get really great responses and actually make some money doing it. And that's just given me a yearly deadline to come back and produce more and keep delving my own ideas and experiences and see like what's worthy of being put on stage.
And so the writing, the performing, the directing, all those three aspects, and the other things that you obviously, that are part of you, they all inform one another, don't they? And you're better at all three, I guess, as a result.
Yeah, I really believe that the best way to learn any art form is twofold. It's by osmosis and by doing it.
Yeah.
And so for anybody who wants to be a theater practitioner, it's just good to see as much theater as you can, and it's good to do as much theater as you can. And a frustrating thing about being in the theater is it's not an art form that you can, theoretically anyway, it's not an art form that you can just do on your own. If you follow the standard model, then you're auditioning and you're waiting for other people to let you practice your art. And I just never had the patience for that. And I wasn't very good at auditioning, and I didn't want to be Hamlet. I didn't want to play the great role. So I started doing it myself and have continued to do that. And I sometimes get work from other people, but it's mostly self-generated. So I'd suggest that to anybody that wants to do this, is you accrue a lot of hours and you learn by doing. And then on the fringe, you see a lot. Fringe theater is cheap, and if you're an artist yourself, you'll probably get competent at other people's shows, and you'll see what works and you'll see what doesn't work, and your conception of what's possible on stage will be expanded. It's a really wonderful education that continues. You know, I learn every single time I sit down to write. I learn every single time I rehearse and every single time I perform.
Now, you're a favorite on the Fringe circuit. I can't remember the figure that I read somewhere of how many shows you've done now.
I've created 15 monologues. I've co-created about as many more. And I've toured 103 Fringe festivals so far, most of them in Canada, some abroad.
Yeah, and so what's the Fringe circuit like in this country? I mean, are you able to go to all parts of the country?
The farthest east I've ever gone for a Fringe festival is Montreal. There is a Fringe in Halifax, and I believe there's one in Charlottetown now, and I've never been to either one. But, yeah, it's a great way to tour Canada. Now, the good and bad side of the kind of rise of independent creative culture is that there's more people that want to do Fringes than there were before, which I think is wonderful. On the other hand, it's really hard for somebody touring to get into as many Fringes as they might like to. If they want to do them all, then that's just harder to do now than it was when I started in the late 90s.
The scene here in Vancouver, because we have such a rich theater scene, and you know, I get to talk to a lot of you that live and work here, and it's always fascinating as an audience member to see the great variety of shows in this town. Where are we, do you think, in terms of, say, if we had to compare ourselves to other Canadian cities, other theater cultures? It is pretty good here, isn't it?
It is, yeah. One of the things that is hugely pleasing to me is that the culture of the independent theater scene in Vancouver, which is the majority of the theater scene in Vancouver, is people who create their own work. There are people who are taking big risks and people who are creating stuff that nobody's done before. It's pretty unusual for somebody outside of the arts club to put on a Neil Simon play or a traditional production of Shakespeare. Most people are doing something experimental and yet trying to be accessible enough to attract audiences. And two festivals, the Push Festival and the Fringe Festival, attract huge audiences. And I think this says something very good about the artistic culture of the city.
Yeah, and you find it's a feasible way to make a living in this town, do you?
I do. Of course, my career is different than that of a lot of theater practitioners, you know, and I'm on the road a lot. I'm out of town 4 to 6 months a year. But yeah, I think, of course, Vancouver is famously not a cheap place to live. But I was also born and raised here. Yeah. I have a lot of connections here, and I like being here. And, you know, I'm not rich, but I do okay. And I live in a really decent apartment, and I love being here, and I love riding my bike in the winter.
Yeah.
And I'm away for part of the year, and then I'm always happy to come back.
So this play, Toothpaste and Cigars, that you co-wrote, I'm not familiar with it, but I actually just saw the film about a week and a half ago. Not even knowing that I was going to talk to you, which is fortuitous for me.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, how much of the film is different than the play you wrote?
The characters are the same. They have the same names, and the premise is the same. And the bookending device is the same, of these two characters meeting at a party while making poems with the fridge magnets.
I see.
And practically everything else is different.
Yeah.
In the play, it was just the two actors, and they only played those two characters. And we didn't really find out about their lives much other than their relationship with each other. So they didn't have jobs, or at least we didn't specify that. We didn't say where it was. Do they have families? Do they have friends? Do they open up to their friends about this relationship? What's going on with that? So the movie really fleshed all of that out in a wonderful way. I think it's an excellent film. The play entirely consists of conversations between the two leads.
Yeah.
The premise being, this guy is in love with a girl who's in a relationship, and he doesn't want to undermine that, and they just have a really great connection, so they have many, many vibrant conversations as he falls deeper and deeper in love with her.
Yeah, I've never been to Toronto, but the fact that I saw Toronto depicted in that film, I thought was kind of cool, because we don't really see Toronto as a character in a film. And
Toronto usually doubles for other cities. You know, Toronto is often New York, or it's Boston, or it's Chicago. But the movie The F Word is really, in some ways, a love letter to Toronto, the way Woody Allen's movies are often a love letter to New York.
Right. Yeah. The other thing where the boyfriend falls out of the window.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really like that scene, but But anyway,
fair enough.
Other than
maybe a
that.
Bit of wish fulfillment on the male lead's part.
Yeah. How was the process of seeing your work on film like that?
It was pretty exciting. I actually got to visit the set. I have a cameo in the movie, actually. My co-writer and I are in a bar scene. We're over the female lead's shoulder. Or actually, Chantry is encouraging Wallace to hit on a girl at a bar.
And oh, yeah.
Look over the shoulder of the girl in the bar. She's wearing pink. There's me. So we got to visit the set, and everybody was very nice and very welcoming, and the leads were hugely friendly. And the screenwriter was always great, you know, like throughout the whole process of keeping us up to date on, you know, because the writers of the source material are the last people to find out what's happening.
Yeah,
and it took 10 years for this thing to get made. So it was really great to have a lifeline, like within the production, saying, okay, here's the latest news, and here's when it looks like it's going to be made, and oh, looks like we got a cast, and it looks like we have a director, and et cetera, et cetera. So it was really wonderful. I would love to work in that arena again.
Yeah. Well, it is a good film. I quite enjoyed it a lot. And so what's next for you, by the way? Are you working on? I mean, you're all obviously working on stuff, but what might we see next of you?
In Vancouver, I'm directing the remount of a show that I co-created that played here last year at the Fire Hall Arts Center. It's playing at the Fire Hall again. It's called Post Secret, the show.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Post Secret's a website where people send in postcards with secrets on them anonymously, and they get very artful with their depiction of their secrets and with the design of their postcards. So the show is three actors on stage, and they're speaking the text of postcards that are projected behind them and the text of emails people have sent to the project's founder, Frank Warren. So it's people saying things like, you know, sending a message to a person who wrote a given postcard, or someone saying that because of somebody else's postcard, it helped them realize that they were in an abusive relationship. And that plays mid-February to early March. And then apart from that, I'm teaching a solo show course at Langara. You know, I've written and created a lot of one-man shows. And many people have approached me over the years and asked if I could help them with theirs. And now I'm doing that in an actual formal education setting. Part of continuing study, so it's available to anyone. And that's happening right now, and it's happening again in April.
And you find that teaching, I mean, you do this obviously for a living, teaching other people to do what you do, that makes the process of doing it for you richer, doesn't it?
It does, you know, because I've been working with other people on developing their ideas and stories into shows since 2001. And it's really just a matter of seeing what's inside a person and helping them bring that into the world. And both of my parents are teachers. They're retired now. But that's possibly right down to my DNA. And I didn't want to go there for a long time. And now I've started coming around the other way, in part because a lot of the work I do with people, the same notes keep coming up. And that helps me realize, that just also helps me formalize my process, because I wasn't trained how to do this. I was always just doing it by instinct and learning as I went. And then now to be able to dialogue with people in a group setting and to help them bring their ideas into the world, it's hugely satisfying. It's a wonderful process.
Does it make the process of writing easier as you continue?
I think so, you know, because it helps me understand, like, how do you induce inspiration? Do you wait for it to strike or do you make it happen? How do you continue it? How do you involve others? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? How do you evaluate an idea? You know, again, all of this was always done organically in my mind, and now I'm coming up with ways to, like, make this happen for other people as well as for myself.
TJ, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Congratulations on all the success, and break a leg, as I say, with this upcoming production.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to see it.
The websites for more, tjdaw.ca, theaterwire.ca for tickets, theaterwire.com, pardon me, for tickets, and then 20somethingtheater.com for information on the show. TJ Daw, with Rita Bose, wrote 52 Pickup. He joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.